Your questions, your health. This is Mind Matters.
Hello, everyone. This is a My Sahana podcast, our very first podcast, in fact. My name is Kevin, and I am an intern here, and today we have a very special guest. So if you please would introduce yourself.
Hello, Kevin, and namaste. My name is Sandhya Karnik, and I have been a hospice volunteer for the last 11 years. Originally, I'm from Mumbai, India, and I'm living in this country for 43 years. I was in banking for the last 24 years, and now I'm a retired grandmother.
Okay, thank you, Sandhya. Could you please say what you do now?
Well, I'm retired from working, but I am a hospice volunteer. And, you know, my hospice volunteer commitment is once a week for about 4 to 6 hours. So that's what I do. I work as a volunteer once a week.
Okay. Do you think you could kind of tell us about hospice care and how you got into it?
Well, what happened is in 2001, my daughter, who is a chemical engineer, she quit her job and she joined AmeriCorps. And then 9/11 happened. Mm. And as soon as she joined AmeriCorps, her first assignment was at Ground Zero, helping the Red Cross people along with the victims and the families. And she used to share her experiences with me through email and phone. And I keep thinking, this is my daughter and she's doing so much. Mm. I need to do something, to pay my dues to the community. I want to get involved in something. And that's how, my motivation to work for hospice started.
It's very, very altruistic of you to say. In hospice care, could you kind of go into detail about what you do?
Okay. There are different hospice organizations throughout Bay Area. The one that I am working for is Sutter VNA Hospice of Emeryville. And the way hospice works is, there are paid staff, which is like nurses, psychiatrists, therapists, the coordinators. And then there are volunteers. And so I am one of the volunteers. And do you want to know how I got involved or how I got trained in hospice?
Oh, yeah, yes, absolutely.
So what happened is I called the Sutter VNA office and they asked me to come for an interview. And after the interview, I have to give them the references, my application, my medical, report, like chest x-ray and all those things. And then they called me for another interview. And after all that, they said, okay, we accept you as a volunteer. So it's a lengthy procedure to get in, which assures you that they are getting the right people in the right places. Mm. And once, I became officially the volunteer, then there was a training part. So I have to go for a training every Tuesday and Thursday for 2 hours for 4 weeks. So, about 16 hours of training was given with professional people, what was expected of us to do as a volunteer.
Oh, okay. Wow. That is seems like a lot of work. Was there anything particularly you learned throughout that training phase that you didn't know beforehand?
I had a choice to what kind of volunteer work I wanted to do, whether I want to be a masseuse, a therapist, just to run errands, or do a respite visit. And I chose to do a respite visit. A respite visit is like a visit to the home of the patient, where you sit with the patient and the caretaker gets some time to go off and do their own things. So, as you start doing the work, I think you learn a lot as an on-hand experience.
Okay.
But they did give us a manual and the protocols and, the do's and don'ts and all those things. But still, it's a whole new ball game.
Yeah, yes, absolutely. Is there any particular reason why you chose that instead of the other ones?
I thought respite visit will be good for me, the way I connect with people,
mm-hmm.
you know. I would like to sit with somebody and talk and, you know, get involved. So, you know, yeah, I mean, offhand I just felt like I do want to do respite visit.
Okay. So what are some, like, very useful techniques that you learned? Like, if I wanted to go into hospice care and I wanted to be, you know, very
yeah.
well received in that way, what tips would you have to give for me?
You know, I mean, as a respite visit volunteer, to enter in a strange house, which, you know, for the first time, can be very apprehensive because you don't know what's behind that door.
Mm-hmm.
You have never met those people. But if you go with an open mind, and if you sit there and listen to the patient or the family, and then in a very subtle way, you can show your sympathy, your support, you know, your compassion, then you get connected.
Mm-hmm.
Once the connection is made with the family, then the hospice training comes, you know, comes to help you. But so I would just say, go with an open mind, be patient, and be a good listener.
Mm, okay. That sounds very logical. What in hospice care surprised you the most, I wouldn't ask?
You know, I mean, I have never met American families on this level. I have colleagues and friends who are Americans.
Mm-hmm.
But to go to a stranger and look at the family dynamics, that was a surprise. And usually, you know, when hospice happens is when all the other medical treatments are exhausted and the patient has less than 6 months to live. So as it is, you are a very, you know, at the emotional critical point because you know the patient has less than 6 months to live. And you are entering the house where people are under the shadow of loss, the illness, you know. And so you really don't know what to expect. But each time I go to a family, I see such a good things about the members of the family. You know, the loyalties, the resilience they have, the bindings they have, you know, the commitments, you know. And I'm thinking, oh my God, I mean, why did I think that American families are falling apart? That's not true. To me, what I have seen is American family life is still intact. And there are, you know, sons and daughters who will do everything for their parents. So that was a surprise to me.
Okay, that's, I'm glad you mentioned that. So going into the field, was there any preconceived notions you had about, you know, patients or people who didn't work in the field?
That was one good thing, that I did not have any preconceived notion.
Okay.
Because I had no experience in this field and I haven't heard any good or bad things about, you know, this kind of work. So I just went with, you know, open mind. So, and I think that helped.
Okay. Let's say I were to want to go into hospice care. What steps would I have to take in order to achieve that goal?
Okay. First, you know, just sit down and make sure that that's what you do want to do. You can, you know, now through Google, you can find a lot of information and read about, you know, what kind of services you are providing. But once you decide to become a hospice volunteer, you need to choose a designated hospice organization that you want to work for. Then you call the coordinator. Then, you know, they take it from there. You know, they ask you to fill some information. They call you for an interview. And you have to go through all the steps to become, you know, as I said, the medical exams. Because they need chest x-rays to make sure you are not exposed to TB because you're going to sit with a patient, you know, all those things.
Mm.
And so the technical part, they will take care of it. But you can still become knowledgeable about what you are getting into.
Mm. That's great. Thank you for sharing. I do have another question. Could you, so what would I expect like a daily sort of life of a hospice care worker to be? So kind of just, you know, I would like to know personally.
Yeah. And that I think you learn as you start working with the family because the caretaker, you know, usually is like 60-year-old son or daughter, because the mother or father who is dying is 85, 90.
Mm.
So that's their this age group.
Mm.
Then the caretaker, because he or she is taking care of the parent 24 hours a day, they are burned out. They're exhausted and they're tired. The surprises I get in my visit is I go there for the patient, but sometimes I feel like, oh, I'm there for the caretaker. Because they sit down and they pour their hearts out.
Mm.
And they, you know, they tell about the family histories, about their parents, how good life was, whatever. That's where you start knowing the family better and better.
Mm.
And then the caretaker goes out because, you know, he has confided in you. And for every visit that I go, you know, that connection becomes more and more stronger with the caretaker and with the family.
Mm.
So
mm.
that's something that I did not know that I would get into. You know?
Oh, that's good to hear. You know, hearing family stories is always, you know, a great way to bond with people. Would you say, so would every family have, you know, different ways of, you know, expressing themselves to you?
Yes. See, because we live in Bay Area,
mm-hmm.
which has so much ethnic diversity.
Yes.
So in my 11 years, I have been to a family of Vietnamese house. I have been to Afghani family. I have been to Turkish family, Eastern European families, you know, one or two Indian families. And then the rest is mostly Caucasian American families. So, you know, it's like an international mixture. The culture is different.
Mm.
But, you know, the pain is there. The pain and the apprehension of the loss, that's same. And so, yeah, so each culture has different etiquettes, different manners, you know, and you learn your ways to work around it, you know. So, but that was also quite enriching because I wasn't exposed to all this, you know, to have this much cultural difference and this much inside information in their, you know, day-to-day life. So,
okay, that's very heart compassionate of you. Just really fast, do you think you have a very like a very memorable moment during hospice care you would like to share?
I have many, but yeah, the one memorable moment is my last patient that I had. I saw him for 8 months, which is a long time.
Mm.
Because many of my patients I have seen just once or twice and they are gone. So this man, I got connected. He was a black African from Congo who spoke fluent French because, you know, he raised in a French colony. And then he has been living in this country for the last 25 years. And then he told me so much about his African life, you know. I mean, his large family and his parents. And then we started having coffee together. And, I mean, he was an intellectual person. He read a lot. And so I think I got a friend. And so when 8 months later, when he was gone, there was an emptiness in my life.
Mm.
Because, you know, that connection was there. So
it's I'm sorry for your loss. I'm sure we've all gone through similar experiences. As you know, My Sahana is always trying to find ways to help the community. Is there anything specifically that My Sahana could do to help the families in hospice care?
My Sahana is really doing good work because I do read their articles that comes. So I think they can add some more articles about hospice care. So their readers would know. And also I think the South Asian community is not involved in hospice as I have seen. So maybe My Sahana can do something about that. I mean, the coordinators from My Sahana can come and talk to the hospice people that I work with. And they can exchange ideas and, you know, and maybe the hospice coordinator can tell them, you know, how to go about it. But I'm, you know, we could use My Sahana's help to kind of, you know, get the word around and let people that hospice is there.
All right. Well, we will do so. Okay, Sandhya, before we let you go, I do have one last question for you.
Mm-hmm.
So I've heard going into hospice care is it's not the easiest thing to do since you're always constantly, you know, seeing people leave. And is it really as negative as people say it is?
You know, I'm glad you asked me that, because a lot of my friends and colleagues, you know, ask me, aren't you depressed? I mean, how can you do it? Because you are going to visit a patient who you know is going to go away in a couple of weeks or a couple of months. And I said, no, I mean, I first, when I started, I didn't know what to expect out of myself, how I would feel. But now that I'm doing it over the years, I don't feel depressed. I feel gratifying. You know, I feel gratified because you know that you have touched the life, you know, in some special ways. Another thing I found out about my hospice families is they did not know much about India or Indian families or Indian cultures. So by connecting them, I think one family at a time, I have changed their preconceived ideas about Indian community, you know, for better. And I'm not taking the credit for myself. I could do it because I trusted them and they trusted me. So, you know, I mean, if you get so much rewards out of it, you don't feel depressed. You feel grateful that I can do this, you know.
Well, thank you for sort of knocking that stereotype out. I'm glad that you could hopefully open some eyes today. We are out of time today. Thank you for listening, all, and this has been a Maisa Hana podcast.
Mind Matters is a radio show produced by Maisa Hana. To learn more about Maisa Hana, visit www.maisahana.org.